Introduction. So yeah, as we talked, I will talk about the Viper survey that was focused on mainly probing the growth rate of structure at a ratio similar to one. So this is the outline of my presentation. I will start talking briefly about the ratio space distortions. I will describe the main features of Viper survey, and then I will move on describing my contribution within the Viper's collaboration that has used the clustering of luminous blue galaxies to measure the growth rate of structure. And then I'll present the latest work I have been performing with Will and his former postdoc here at the University of Portsmouth, Davide Bianchi, that has focused on the application of a new method to mitigate for missing observations in galaxy ratio survey and its application to the Viper's data. So we know that the accelerated expansion of the universe is now well established, but there is still this question that is unanswered, that is whether the evolution of the universe at large scales, large cosmological scales, obeys the equations of general relativity plus dark energy, or do we have to modify the equations of gravity? One way to answer to this question is to look at the growth of structure, to look at the gravitational effects on the growth of structure. And in principle, if we quantify the density fluctuations in the universe in terms of the overdensity delta, which is defined as the fractional overdensity with respect to the universe mean density, and we decompose, we factorize this quantity in terms of a spatial component delta zero and a time evolution component that is given by this growth factor d, we can define a new parameter, which is the growth rate of structure f of z, defined as the logarithmic derivative of d scale, growth factor with respect to the scale factor. So this parameter is predicted with measurable differences by different theories of gravity as a function of redshift. So in principle, a percent level precise measurement of this parameter at different redshifts will allow us to discriminate between different theories of gravity. One way to probe the growth of structure is to use the galaxy peculiar velocities as diagnostic for the gravity. What happens in galaxy redshift surveys is that when we measure the galaxy redshift, the observed galaxy redshift that is takes a contribution from the cosmological redshift that is contaminated by a Doppler effect given by the line of sight component of the peculiar velocity. So when we try to translate these observed redshift into cosmological distances, these will be distorted along the line of sight with respect to the real ones. So when we look at the spatial distribution of galaxies in real space, for instance, this is the a simulated catalog of 2DF galaxy redshift survey, and we look at the same distribution in the redshift space, we'll see that this is distorted along the line of sight. You have this small displacement of galaxies in the radial direction. This is the so-called redshift space, and the distortions are called the redshift space distortions. So now we have this problem of quantifying the spatial distribution of galaxies, and what we do is to use the two-point correlation function. This is not the only way, obviously, but this is the one of the way we are using, or use the power spectrum that is its counterpart in the Fourier space. For the particular case of the correlation function, this is defined as the excess probability of finding galaxy pairs at a given separation with respect to the same probability in a random catalog. To see the effects of these redshift space distortions in the shape of the two-point correlation function, it is useful to decompose the pair separation S in two components, one radial along the line of sight, where we have this, the impact of these distortions, and a transverse to the line of sight component RP, where we don't change the pair separations. So this is a typical shape of the two-point correlation function, anisotropic two-point correlation function in redshift space, and we can mainly identify two different regimes. These measurements are from an n-body simulation, which is the multi-dark RAN1 simulation. We can identify many two regimes on large scale, what we usually call the linear regime. We have that the motions of galaxies are given by this coherent infall towards overdense regions. And these motions occur with low velocities and in low density regime. So what we see in redshift space is an apparent enhancement of galaxy clustering along the line of sight, what is given by this squashing in the radial direction. And this, the so-called Kaiser effect, that is directly proportional to the linear growth rate of structure f of g. That is our parameter of interest. But as soon as we move on smaller scales, the motions of galaxies occur with higher and higher velocities. And once they enter the very large structures, their motions are completely randomly distributed in all directions, and they occur with high peculiar velocities. So what happens is that if you observe these scales in Reshe space, you see a suppression of clustering power. What is given by these elongated features in the radial direction, the same feature you can see in the shape of the galaxy clusters when they are observed in Reshe surveys. This is the so-called fingers of God effect, and this is one of the nonlinear effects that is affecting the Reshe space clustering of galaxies. So while the linear regime Reshe space distortions are relatively easy to model, we have some analytical models for these scales. This is not true anymore for the small scale clustering, where we have to use some empirical functions to model these scales. So in principle, what we do is to take the linear model and couple this model with this, for instance, is for the power spectrum that relates the real space clustering with the Reshe space by means of these fitting parameters, which are model parameters, which are the growth rate, the galaxy bias, and the direction of where we are looking at. And we couple this linear model with a damping factor that suppresses the power predicted by the linear model, because we have this expression of power at small scales.
So what scales is this Kaiser model decent to, say, like a percent or something?
Well, approximately you have to go at very large scales, let's say above 30 to 40 megaparsec, you can start using these kind of models, but still you have to couple with some of these damping factors, because there is still some residual nonlinearity even at those scales. Then we have some coupling between the velocity and density field that we have to take into account. And even at large scale, this model is not a very good approximation. So, this is just the first approximation. And I would like just to tell that we have some models to model the Reshe space distortions on all scales, but these are not, you cannot apply these models to data, because there are some ingredients that we cannot calculate from data themselves. If we have access to the velocity distributions of galaxies or galaxy pairs, we have this streaming model that can theoretically can model all the scales. But these models cannot be applied to the data. It's very difficult. It's almost impossible now, because you have to know the pairwise velocity distribution of galaxies, and that is depends on the pair separation scale you are looking at. So we'll have a different distribution to model these scales, another distribution to model larger scales, and so on.
That makes it seem then that it'll be difficult to use RSD
Well, you have to make some approximation then. You have to use some answers for that velocity distributions, because these are not accessible from the data. And so what you do is to make some answers on those functions. Yeah. Just summary of this part, we need 1% level measurements of f of z to probe gravity. What we do is to use Reshe space distortions that are measured in that are detected in the shape of the two-point correlation function Reshe space, and the modeling is complicated by the nonlinear effects on small scales, which are also the scales unfortunately where we have high signal to noise ratio on our measurements. So let me now move on describing briefly the main features of Wipers survey. Wipers is similar to for volume and density to the 2DF galaxy Reshe survey, but at a higher Reshe, approximately between 0.5 and 1.2. It is based on the multi-object spectroscopy, in particular on the multi-slit spectroscopy that used the VMOS spectrograph on the ESO Very Large Telescope. And this is a typical exposure of VMOS observation, what we call the pointing. This is composed of four different quadrants that are four independent CCDs that are coupled with this slit mask, and you see some tiny circles here that are the targets in the parent sample, and then you see some tiny rectangles. I don't know if they are very clear here. And those are the regions over which the galaxy spectra are dispersed. The observations have been carried out within the W1 and W4 field of a photometric optical photometric survey that was the CFTLS survey, Canada France Hawaii Telescope Lagasse survey. And in the same area that was selected for Vipers observation, we have already some previous spectroscopic observations, mainly given by this VVDS project. And these data have been used to calibrate the target selection of Vipers given this photometric cartography from CFTLS. And the final spectroscopic measurements are affected by this kind of redshift error, sigma z over 1 plus z, where z is the redshift of 5.4 times 10 to minus 4. And this corresponds to an error on the peculiar velocity of galaxies of 160 kilometers per second. So a little bit about the target selection. This was based on a robust color preselection in U minus G and R minus I magnitudes. And this allowed to efficiently remove galaxies at lower redshifts, smaller than 0.5, and gave the at the same time a higher completeness of the sample at higher redshifts. The survey was characterized by a broad, and that means it targeted different types of galaxies with different luminosities, and with a high sampling rate, which is approximately 47%. The catalog was a flux limited catalog. So, and the it was a flux limited catalog with a limit magnitude limit in I band of 2.5. So you observe all the galaxies that are brighter than that magnitude, apparent magnitude. Okay.
So in terms, how dependent, I guess, you know, is the selection of the spectroscopic?
Well, that it comes after when you try to observe different and to get the spectra of different galaxies. So if you have two galaxies that are very close to each other, you cannot take spectra from both of them because there is this zeta collision problem that I will talk later. Yeah. But at this point, you just select all the galaxies in your photometric catalog brighter than that limited magnitude. That will be your parent catalog. Okay. And then on top of that parent, you assign your zetas. So the survey area is not very large. It is approximately 24 square degrees, and we had to struggle when performing the large-scale structure analysis because we don't have access to larger scales that are more linear, where the modeling is easier. Of these 24 square degrees, 16 were in W1, and half of them was in W4. These two fields are independent, so they are far from each other. And then we have this co-moving volume in the fiducial cosmology, which was compatible with the latest Planck results. And the final catalog contained approximately 100,000 spectra with different quality of redshift measurements. And this is an animation of the distribution of galaxies, 3D distribution in W1 and W4 field. So as for all the spectroscopic surveys, also Vipers data were affected by some selection functions. And the first of them is the radial selection function. This is given by the fact that you have some magnitude limit catalog, so you cannot detect all the galaxies at higher redshift because you cannot detect fainter galaxies at higher redshift. You can detect them at a lower redshift, and below redshift 0.5, you have this color cut. So we removed all these galaxies on purpose. Okay. Then we have these angular selection functions. Two of them are these binary masks. The photometric mask that is given by the area of the sky where we don't have the photometric data to select the targets, or the area of the sky that are obscured by bright stars. So you cannot select targets even there. So these are binary. That means that at those regions, we don't have the parent catalog from where we can select the targets. Then we have this spectroscopic mask that is given by the footprint of the VMOS observations on the sky. So if you remember the pointing I was showing before here, you can see that we have four quadrants. This is one pointing. And we have this empty cross between these four quadrants. And since the targeting strategy is that of one pass, we are not covering these empty gaps. We're not filling these empty gaps with the second exposure. So that is giving our spectroscopic mask that is, for instance, here you can see these empty horizontal and vertical stripes. That's exactly what I was showing before. And that is the second binary mask. Then we have that slit collision, or I would call that spectra collision, because that is given by the constraint that two galaxy spectra cannot overlap to each other. So that puts a constraint on how far you can put two slits. And for instance, here you can see a distribution of angular completeness of galaxy pairs as a function of separation in right ascension direction and declination direction. And you see that here you don't, you have almost zero completeness because here there is this spectral collision effect. So you don't have pairs, you have very few pairs here.
So what's the color, sorry?
The colors are the strength of the, is the magnitude of your angular completeness. It's defined as the pairs in your observed spectroscopic sample with respect to the same quantity in the parent sample. So in the parent sample, you don't have this constraint of spectral collision because that are photometric catalogs, that are images. While on top of them, when you perform your spectroscopic observations, and at that point, you are limited by this spectral collision effect.
So what does it mean then for that to be bigger than one?
Sorry? That is mainly noise. I mean, it's because you have this statistical fluctuation. It's not, you have to see this also with the error bars.
That's noise, you're saying?
I would not be so worried about that fact that it is higher than one, because here this is given by the fact that you are piling up all the spectra very close to each other as much as you can. And that is giving you this kind of features. And some of them could also be some sort of statistical fluctuation on your measurement of this quantity.
What actually is the quantity that's being plotted through?
It's the angular completeness, is the pairs with this pair separation in the spectroscopic sample over the number of pairs in the parent, underlying parent sample.
Okay. So it's a ratio of pairs you've observed, a particular separation to those that you would have
exactly
observed, split into deck and RA, where the spectra line up with the deck direction.
Yes. So probably it is more clear if I show you. Wait, just I'm getting there.
Through your talk very quickly.
Yeah, it's almost finished.
We've got more time than that.
So you, here, this is a typical quadrant of Viper survey, and all these rectangles are the spectra. So you are piling up all the spectra as much close to each other as you can.
Uh-huh.
And so you are some sort of adding some extra artificial clustering in your distribution of targets.
All of the pairs of the targets were taken from the parent sample.
Yes.
Yeah, so
but not, you cannot observe all the galaxies in the parent sample.
Yeah, so I understand how it's possible to be less than one. I'm just puzzled about how you can be bigger than one in that ratio.
Okay. Because if you remove some galaxy from your parent sample, you don't do it randomly, but you do it with some given strategy.
But if they're missing from the parent sample, and they're also missing then from the target sample, right?
Yes, but I have to think about that.
Okay.
Maybe.
It must be something like you haven't taken the parent sample of galaxies, you've taken the parent sample of randoms or something, and there are just statistical fluctuations then.
Oh, okay, so that wasn't like relative to the parent, it was relative to some realization.
Because otherwise Neil's right, and you can't observe more pairs that are there as a parent.
If you could, that'd be great.
No, yeah, I mean, I have to think about that because there could be different effects. One is the statistical appropriation that is given by the ratio between the mesh pairs in the in the spectroscopic catalog with respect to the parent. It's not with respect to the randoms. You have this effect of statistical fluctuations, and the other one is this piling up of the spectra with the given length.
Oh, unless you normalize. Unless you're not taking the, you're taking the normalized number.
Yeah, those are the normalized, yes.
Sorry, I didn't follow. So it's your, the ratios you're taking are not the total number observed, the total number parent. They're the fraction observed in that bin.
In that bin?
Yeah.
Compared to, observed, compared to the fraction observed in that bin in parent. Okay, sorry.
So you normalize your pair counts
you
in...
Yeah.
So you normalize your pair counts in the spectroscopic catalog you measure, and you take and you do the same for the parent sample. You take the ratio of these normalized quantities.
So it's not like the ratio.
It's not directly the ratio. Of, it's not. Yeah, it's normalized number count pair counts.
Okay.
All right. Well.
So it's like in that point, you've got 50% of them in that bin, and in the parent catalog, you've got 40% of that in that bin.
40% of what?
Of the total number of pairs in the parent compared to the total number of pairs in the observed.
I'll let you guys go. Sorry.
Okay.
We're already wasting too much time on that.
So, where we were? Okay. So, we have this spectral collision. We will talk about later about that. Then finally, we have this effect of redshift failure that is given by our inability to get reliable redshift measurements for a number of galaxies. And that could be caused by different factors such as field-to-field varying observational conditions or the quality of the spectra or the type of the spectra we are looking at. And for instance, here we show the fraction of reliable redshift measurements in each quadrant.
This is hugely different, right? Some of these observations are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. So
there is like the main thing controlling that or something? Or?
Sorry?
So like weather, like the main like factor?
That could be a factor then, yeah. The fact that they vary a lot from field to field, that is one factor, the main factor. And then you have also the how many, for example, red galaxies or how many good quality spectra you're gathering, you're collecting in each field.
Okay, so the failure rate also then depends just saying on like the, what's the function of like the kind of galaxy?
Yes, oh. Yes, also, yeah. So let me conclude this part with briefly talking about the mocks we have been using. These were a set of 153 independent mocks for W1 and W4 field of Y pairs built by Sylvain de la Torre in Marseille. These were based on the big multi-dark Planck dark matter n-body simulation, which was a cubic box of 2 gigaparsec aside. And the halos were identified using the Friends of Friends algorithm. These halos were populated using the HOD method and with parameters that have been calibrated with the, using the first public data release of Vipers. These mock catalogs contain different information about the galaxies. The most important for the work I'm going to present is that they contain the information on the luminosity and the color type of galaxies, if a galaxy is blue or red. We have used two sets of galaxies. One is given by the ideal parent mocks. That means these mocks are just a simple geometry on the sky. It's a rectangular sky coverage. And they are affected only by the Vipers radial selection function. And we don't imprint the angular selection functions in these mocks. And these mocks are used mainly to test our modeling systematics. So we don't want to have sensible to the observational systematic errors. Finally, we have these fully realistic Vipers-like mocks where on top of the radial selection function, we also imprint the angular mask and the target selection scheme. And these mocks have been used at the final step of our data analysis technique method to test the method against the observational systematics. So different works have been performed using the VIPERS data. And the main scientific target was the use of RSD technique to probe the graph structure, and four different projects have been worked on that. There is this standard RSD analysis using the full sample of galaxies in VIPERS. Then this is the project ILAD in VIPERS that used the clustering of luminous blue galaxies to probe the growth rate of structure. Then we used also a cross correlation between the galaxy and voids. And then we have these final measurements that combine the RSD signal with the galaxy-galaxy weak lensing. And then we have some other works that have been performed by the LSS working group and a similar number by the galaxy evolution working group. So the main part of this, main topic point of this part was that the reference range is 0.5 to 1.2. The sampling is broad, that means targets different type of galaxies, the high sampling rate, and the sky coverage is not very, very large. The data analysis technique has been refined using this HOD mocks. Red space distortions was the main scientific target, but there was a broad range of investigation that have been carried out. Now let me move on to the work I have been performing, that is using the clustering of luminous blue galaxies to measure the growth rate of structure. And the aim of this work was to reduce the systematic errors on the estimates of the growth rate using some appropriate tracers, keeping the theoretical model as simple as possible. So coming back to the RST in the two-point correlation function, we already talked about the problems that are occurring when you include the smaller scales in your modeling. But with VIPERS, we don't have access to very large scales, so we are forced to go at those scales. But what happens is in simulated catalogs, we have found that if you use the simple modeling and you try to push your analysis to smaller scales, and what you obtain is that your estimates of the growth rate, for instance, here is the so-called distortion parameter, which is the growth rate scaled by the bias factor. But we can look at these systematics as translated to the growth rate. You get a 10% of systematic error on the growth rate estimate for the galaxy-sized halos. So especially for the future surveys where we have percent level precise measurements, we need to reduce drastically these systematic bias on estimates of the growth rate. You can do it in different ways. The most important is the derivation of the sophisticated theoretical models. That means trying to understand and model the physics that is happening at those scales. Or an alternative could be to isolate some appropriate tracers of the large scale structure that are less sensitive to the nonlinear evolution of the velocity feed at those scales. For example, galaxy clusters or galaxy groups. These don't form the virialized structures, so they are less affected by the nonlinear component of the Picard velocity field. So they mainly follow some sort of coherent info towards over dense regions.
Well, so thinkers of God, I guess, will be smaller for those things.
Yeah, exactly.
But I could imagine that I could imagine that there might be like a stronger like B2 bias. I mean, I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, then you have to be careful on that kind of. Yeah, there is this give and take in.
Seems risky.
Yeah, I mean, it's risky also for the first step where you calibrate your models on the data on the mocks on simulated catalogs, and you don't know how reliable these mock catalogs are for the data. I mean, there will be some differences. So there is some give and take for each of these this point. And finally, you can also define some improved statistics of the galaxy clustering. For example, the clipped dwarf spectrum or the truncated multiple moments we have defined in past. And these the goal of these kind of statistics is to alleviate the impact of nonlinear effect at small scales in the clustering measurements. So in this work, we have focused on the second approach, try to isolate some appropriate tracers of the large scale structure. And we have based our selection on the so-called morphological segregation of galaxies. This tells you that red galaxies are mainly found inside very large structures, such as galaxy groups or clusters. So it is they are expected to be more sensitive to the nonlinear motions at small scales inside these structures. While blue galaxies are mainly inhabit the field, so it's natural to expect them to be more sensitive to the linear growth of structure and to be optimal for the accurate measurements of the growth rate. So we have isolated blue and red galaxies from the full Viper sample using this well-known UV color bimodality, and we have tried to take into account to some extent the evolution with respect of these colors. So what we got is at the end is a subsample of 33,000 blue galaxies and 16,000 red galaxies with this kind of radial selection function. These are red galaxies, blue, and this is the distribution of the total and the full galaxy catalog. So to see that if we measure what we were expecting before, we directly measure the anisotropic two-point correlation function of blue and red galaxies. The color coding and the continuous black contours are measurements from data, while the dashed contours are the mean of 103 Viper-like mocks. So you can clearly see that in the case of red galaxy, the nonlinear feature, mainly the fingers of God effect, is more prominent, while it is almost absent in the case of blue galaxies. And the other thing I would like to highlight here is that if you look at the agreement between the data and the mocks, this is much better for the blue galaxies, and it's not true anymore for the red galaxies. That tells you that it is difficult to model the nonlinear component of the velocity field when you build the mocks. So this can also help in making reliable mock samples. And also, if you look at the small scale modeling of blue galaxies, you see that we have some residual fingers of God effect in the mocks that is not there in the data. That means there is some difficulty to model the small scales when you to include the small scale clustering in the mocks when you are building the mocks.
Is that significant though? I mean, that difference or?
Well, that since you are using mocks to test how reliable is your data analysis technique, that would be. I mean, if you are getting some.
So it's not just like some fluke of the statistics, you mean? Like,
sorry?
That difference at like U equals one, you know, that isn't just like some fluke.
If you look at the blue and red galaxies in the data, just you see these fingers of God effect.
Yeah, for the blue galaxies, I mean, yeah.
Okay, this means that in the mocks you are putting some. Extra
fraction, I guess, is higher.
Yeah, is yeah, exactly.
Or alternatively, it's just like some fluke. I mean,
what is fluke?
How have the mocks been constructed to match the red sample? What parameters have they matched?
They have measured in beams of luminosity and colors the projected correlation function and fitted that with the HOD model predictions. To get the parameters for these two samples. So since yes, there are some problems at smaller scales. Then you have to add some velocities to satellites, and you're using some prescriptions to add this velocity. And
so your mocks are based off of FOF halos, not based off of like a sub-halo catalog, is that right?
No. It's just friends of friend halos. You pick up one halo, you put some if you need some central galaxies. And you distribute some satellites inside that halo using NFW profile, and then you have to assign some velocities to these galaxies. No, you are not using particles, exactly. Here I briefly describe the models we have been using. We used the simplest Kaiser model and a more sophisticated Scott-Shimara model. These two models depends on two fitting parameters, the growth rate and the galaxy bias. But since there is a degeneracy between the amplitude of these parameters and the amplitude of the matter density field, the density power spectrum, what you can constrain is just this combination of B sigma 8, where sigma 8 is the amplitude of matter fluctuations inside spheres of 8 megaparsec. And then to include the small scale nonlinear effects arising from the peculiar velocities, we have coupled these two models with the Lorentzian damping factor that takes this extra nuisance parameter that is sigma 1, 2, that is the dispersion of the velocity distribution. And then what we have fitted is the first two even multiple moments of the two-point correlation function. We have translated this model from the power spectra to the one of the two-point correlation function and fitted the monopole and the quadrupole of the two-point correlation function. So what you see here is that both models depend on some ingredients. There is just one for the Kaiser model, that is P delta delta, that is the matter density power spectrum. And this is easy to obtain. You can use some numerical tools such as CAMP or Hallofit. While the Scocci-Maro model takes into account also the coupling between the density and velocity field, theta is the velocity divergence. And these two quantities, this is the cross-correlation between the density and velocity divergence, and this is the autocorrelation of density velocity divergence. These two quantities are more difficult to obtain, to estimate. You can do it in two different ways. You can use the predictions of the perturbation theory, but we know that the scales that are accessible to Wiper's perturbation theory fails at those scales. And the option that remains to us is to use some fitting functions for P delta theta and P theta theta, and that are calibrated on simulated catalogs. These are the improved version of previously used functions derived in Jennings et al. 2011. And in particular, these functions that we have been using have been calibrated using a set of M-body simulations with different cosmologies, and some of them included also the effect of massive neutrinos. And they are reliable within a few percent, they recover within a few percent of systematic error, the measurements from the simulated catalogs, M-body simulations, up to a K-max of 0.6, that is much larger than, the scales where perturbation theory fails. So let's start with the model testing. We started with using this set of parent mocks where we don't have the impact of angular selection functions or the Zlita assignment scheme. What I show here is the fractional systematic error on F sigma 8, that is the parameter of our interest, as a function of the minimum fitting scale we include in our fit. The maximum fitting scale is fixed at 50 megaparsec. And the points here show the fractional systematic error is a mean fractional systematic error from 153 mocks. And there should be also some error bars that are very small, and that is the error on the mean of these measurements, on the mean. So you can clearly see that in terms of blue and red galaxies, blue galaxies give a much lower systematic bias. Red galaxies are here, all the points here are below 45% of bias. And if you use the Scocci-Maro model, that gives you better results. And we got a 5% of accuracy if we limit our analysis to scales larger than 10 megaparsec. But we want to try to push this scale at lower scales, at lower values, because then we can measure with high precision this parameter. So as a first step, we try to understand where this difference is coming from. So we measured the fraction of saturated galaxies in these mocks for the blue and red galaxies. And since these mocks are calibrated using directly the data, these values are approximately also they reflect also what is happening in to some extent in the data. There is some difference, but we can take these as approximately what is happening in the data. So you can see that this fraction is much lower for the blue galaxies, but it is higher than 50% for red galaxies. And the other thing I would like to highlight here is that if you go at higher redshift, this fraction decreases for each of these samples. That is happening because our catalog is a magnetic limit catalog. So at higher redshift, you observe only mainly luminous galaxies that are statistically centered galaxies with respect to the fainter galaxies. And yeah, so we have used this this measurement to try to improve these systematic errors. So you want to further load this fraction. So what we have done is to apply a luminosity cut to our flux limit catalog to obtain these volume limit catalogs of luminous blue and luminous red galaxies. So you throw away all the galaxies below this luminosity cut and you take only the brighter galaxies in these regions. What we got is a subsample of approximately 8,000 luminous blue galaxies and 4,000 luminous red galaxies in the refresh range 0.6 to 1, because this is the optimal refresh range to have a higher number of objects when you apply this kind of luminosity cuts. We have taken the ideal parent mux of these luminous blue and red galaxies and try to figure out the systematic errors on F sigma 8. So what we get here is a much better results with respect to the magnitude limit catalogs, because now we are going between minus 25 to plus 25, while before it was going to minus 45. So you see that, for example, at 10 megaparsec, the results from red galaxies are almost unbiased. But the best results, better results are obtained when you use the luminous blue galaxy and fit these measurements with the Scott-Shimara model. In that case, we have that the systematic errors is within 5% at all scales. So I measured the fraction of satellites in these volume limit catalogs, and we got that effectively we reduced this fraction by a factor of approximately 2, and that gives us this kind of improvement in our accuracy. So the last step is to include the observational effect in our data analysis method, and we have to correct for example, for the angular masks. That can be done by imprinting the same masks in the random catalog, so you don't need to further correct for that. Then remains this effect of the spectra collision, and to correct that, we upweighted each galaxy by the so-called target sampling rate, that is defined as the number of slits that are you using for the observations over the total number of targets in your parent sample. And you upweight each galaxy by this quantity. Then you have to correct for the redshift failures, and you use a similar approach. You define this spectroscopic success rate, that's given by the number of reliable redshift measurements given over the total number of slits you are placed over targets. This gives you approximately the probability of getting the reliable redshift measurements. Then we use this angular upweighting to correct the small scale clustering, to further correct this small scale clustering, that takes the ratio of the angular clustering correlation function of the spectroscopic sample with respect to the parent sample. So this use the information you have in the photometric sample to correct these smaller scales. A last effect that you have to include in the modeling is the effect of the redshift error that is affecting the data. And to do that, since that can be approximated by the effect of a random velocity component with a fixed distribution that is mainly Gaussian, since the errors are Gaussian. So we have coupled our model with a second Gaussian damping factor. So when you take together all these corrections and you perform your data analysis method, apply your data analysis method to fully Vipers-like mocks of volume-limited luminous blue galaxies, you get this kind of systematic errors. And you see that if the points here are the mean measurements from 153 Vipers-like mocks, and they are on the mean. If you want to get the error on the singularization, obviously you have to multiply this by a factor of 12. So you see that for minimum scales larger than 5 megaparsec, the results are almost pretty unbiased. And if you compare this plot, you see that you improve these points. And that is mainly given by the fact that when you apply your slit assignment, you are further removing some satellites in your data, because you cannot put two slits on two centers if they are too close to each other. And this is not happening for the central galaxies. So in principle, you are almost complete for the central galaxies, but you are not for the satellites. So you are further reducing that nonlinear component in your galaxy population. So just a quick comparison of results I have obtained using the luminous blue galaxy with the standard RSD analysis using the full catalog of Vipers data, and using an even more sophisticated Taruya model, and you can see that the systematic errors are compatible with the one found here, probably even better, and the statistical error is also compatible. So then we have moved on the data, and we have performed this last consistency test to see if, as found in MOX, our measurements for varying mean shifting scales rather than 5 megaparsec are stable. They are, so this is a further robustness test. And then we have decided to use this measurement as the reference estimate because it is as at a lower scale where the measurements are precise. So what I show here is the measurements of the monopole and the quadrupole from the MOX in the cyan. The measurements from the data are the points with the error bars, and this is the best fitting model. And this is what called the money plot. And this is the measurements from our catalog. Our measurement is compared to other measurements from Vipers data, that is the color points, and also compared to other measurements from other surveys at different redshifts. And measurements from Vipers are all compatible to each other, also because the errors are larger, pretty large. And we have to be careful when looking at this plot, because especially when comparing measurements from Vipers survey to other surveys, because in our case, we have fixed the cosmology. We don't vary some cosmological parameters because we don't have access to larger scales, for example, to the BO signature. While the other surveys, apart from the VVDS, they have included the effect of varying some cosmological parameters. So you have to be careful when comparing the error bars from our measurements to the other surveys. So the conclusion is that the accuracy we got using some specific tracers of LSS is even better than using more sophisticated RSD models on the full galaxy sample. While the statistical precision is competitive with the standard RSD analysis, even though we used less number of objects, because when you use a more sophisticated model, for let's say the Taruya model, you are also increasing the number of fitting parameters that you can reduce when your modeling is simpler. The method is promising for future surveys, especially for DESI, where the survey will target different types of objects. But since the measurements will be very precise, you have to be careful about details of in the mock construction or how we are dealing with the with different observation effects. For example, the sample selection or the mock construction, or also when you look at take into account the redshift errors, because since the measurements will be very precise, the impact of redshift error could be significant. So I don't know how much time I have.
A few minutes.
Oh, just a few minutes? Okay, so quickly, we have applied a new method to correct for the missing observations in Vipers. That was a method proposed by Will and his former postdoc, Davide Bianchi at Portsmouth. That is the so-called pairwise inverse probability weighting coupled with the angular up weighting to increase the statistical precision on the measurements. We applied to the Vipers data. This is the Vipers assignment scheme. This is the method that upweights each galaxy pair count by the corresponding pairwise weight. And this is computed using a number of realizations. So you quantify what's the probability of a given pair to be observed, and you upweight your pair count by the inverse of this probability. We infer this using a set of survey realization given a parent sample. So you run your survey targeting, let's say 100 times. You see how many times a given pair is selected with respect to the total number of realizations, and that gives you an empirical value of your probability. And you couple that with this angular upweighting that helps you in improving the statistical precision of your measurements. So this is the workflow of this kind of work. Is you could start with the parent sample, you run your survey realization, you use them to compute the pairwise weights, inverse probability weights, use these weights to correct these realizations, and then you compare these corrected measurements to the parent sample. So let me skip how we deal with this with Vipers. That is going to be pretty large. And the method claims to be unbiased, provided that there are no pairs in your catalog with zero probability of being observed. So what we have done here is for one parent Vipers parent mux, which is the measurements from the monopole, quadrupole and hexadecapole for the two-point correlation function in our space. From the parent are the lines, continuous, dashed, dotted, and dashed. And then you use this pairwise inverse probability weighting plus angular upweighting to correct the measurement from these survey realizations you have drawn from this parent sample. You see that the corrected measurements match pretty well the measurements from the parent sample, even though these are not fully unbiased. You have this residual bias at smaller scales, and also here there is a tiny bias with respect to the reference estimate. The same happens, this is the fractional systematic on the monopole with respect to parent sample, the quadrupole and the hexadecapole as a function of the scale. So remember that the method is unbiased, provided that there are no zero probability pairs. What we have found is that in our number of realizations, there are approximately 0.7% of galaxy pairs that are never targeted, and we have to deal with these kind of pairs as they have zero probability of being observed in our ensemble of realizations. And this is giving you the extra bias you're getting there. So if you decompose the standard estimator of the two-point correlation function, that is the Nandizeli estimator for the parent sample, you divide it in two contributions, that is coming from the observable pairs, that are the pairs with non-zero probability of being observed, with the ones unobservable, the one with zero probability, you see that the sum of these two components gives you the measurement from the parent sample. And if you do these measurements from your mock, for instance, this is the contribution coming from this guy, is the red dashed dotted line. There is a blue dashed line that is coming from the observable pairs. And when you combine them, you get these green circles that are perfectly overplotted to the black line, that is the measurement from the parent sample. And here I show you the fractional systematic on the monopole, quadrupole, and hexadecapole for the targeted observable pairs, the pairs with non-zero probability of being observed in our ensemble of realizations with respect to the reference parent sample. And the same we do with the combination of observable and unobservable pairs that is given by the green lines. What is happening here is mainly some numerical effects that are happening at those scales. It's not exactly a bias. So again, what you do here to see if this is what you're finding in your method is you do everything up to here. You correct your survey realization using these pair pairs. But now, rather than comparing to the full sample of pair parent galaxies, you compare the subsample of observable pairs, the pairs with non-zero probability of being observed in your ensemble of realizations. And what you get are these horizontal lines here. This is the same plot I showed you before here. With these shaded bands that are the errors. So you know, you see that in this case, you are perfectly unbiased if you replace your parent sample with the subsample of observable pairs. That tells you that in the case when you have some zero probability pairs, the expectation value of your estimator is no more that of the parent sample, but is the clustering of the observable pairs. Then we try to figure out the observation systematic bias, but I will skip that because it's not that important for this. I mean, it's going to take a long time. So yeah, I think I can stop here.
Why there are some galaxies that are not observable, like ever? I didn't understand like what that meant.
From your parent catalog?
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
there are two effects. It's you take your parent catalog, and you try to collect the spectra for some of these you would like to collect spectra for all of these galaxies,
uh-huh.
But you're limited by the faint size of your fibers or the slits. So if two galaxies are too close to each other, you cannot place on both of them.
Yeah, sure, sure.
You have to miss one of them, and you cannot on small scales. Yes.
Okay.
So you cannot come back and redo.
Is that then affecting like your measurements, like?
Because the same galaxy gives you the contribution for large scale pairs. So if you take this missing galaxy, this is forming some pairs with some galaxies that far away from that. And if you're missing that galaxy, you're missing all the pairs that galaxy is forming for all the other galaxies.
Think about missing close pairs as missing the highly biased galaxies, because they're both in the same halo.
Right.
And then you take them out and you reduce the overall average bias.
Yeah, but your correction, I thought, accounted for that. You know, so, I mean,
not if you've missed it completely. Not if they can never be observed in any one realization.
Sometimes they'll be observed.
No, that was Faisal's point. These are pairs that can never be observed.
Yeah, what I'm showing in this plot, sorry. So you run like 2,000 times your survey realization, and you get this tiny fraction of unobservable pairs while all the galaxies have been observed. So this is the problem. You take your pair, and that has to be observed simultaneously in your realization. So you cannot observe one galaxy and the other not. In that case, you are missing completely that pair.
Right. So if I have like some cluster that has like lots of galaxies near each other.
Yes.
So sometimes I'll observe this galaxy and not its neighbor.
Yeah.
But then in some other realization, I'll observe this galaxy and not its neighbor.
In both cases, you are missing that pair.
That's right. That here is very small separation, and so I don't.
Okay, but that can happen also for large scales. I mean, it's rare, but it can happen for large scale.
Take your example, right? You're only getting half the galaxies in the cluster.
Yeah. So why your correction was needed, I thought.
It corrects for missing pairs.
Right.
But you will always be missing pairs of. You know, some of the pairs in the cluster in any one realization.
And it can happen that. You have this cluster, you have these two galaxies. One time you observe this.
Not that one, right.
Sorry. You observe this, and not this.
Sure. But then sometimes I'll observe that one.
But you never.
Galaxies.
Right.
So I'm always missing that pair. I can never observe that pair. I never know in any one realization what the separation of that pair is, the radial separation, because I've never got riches for them both.
So in one realization, this pair is missing, okay?
So I have like four or whatever possible realizations of my measurements here.
Yeah.
And for all four, you're saying like there's like some pair that I can't.
Yeah. I mean, that is rare, but that is happening.
You can never get a pair
when
the rest is close.
Yeah, for small separation, I agree. But for like the wide separation pairs I'm asking about, right? You know.
Right.
So it's bias was happening even at estimate of whatever, like 10 megaparsecs or something, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing like why I can never get, say, like,
okay.
This pair.
For the close pair, what is happening is that effect of spectral correction. Okay, that is fine.
Yeah.
But what is happening for the large scale is some, what do you say, a combination of some effect. I mean, it's coincidence, you say, for this kind of, if you increase this.
Not coincidence.
It's a consequence. Yeah. through some
if you like just one thing, if you increase by a factor of 10 or 100 this number of realization, then you are going to observe.
Okay, so it's just because you have not enough realization.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, sure.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.